Notice if your introverted children tend to just go with the flow and, as a result, get overlooked. Ask them what they think or feel about family activities. For instance, was today a little busy for you? Teach your other children to include the introvert's opinions. For instance, John, I know you want to go to the park. Ask Heather what she thinks about that. Encourage the other siblings to wait if an introverted child takes longer to give his or her opinion. For instance, Heather needs a minute to think about that, John. Let's see what she thinks. By respecting everyone in the family, all of your children will develop stronger interpersonal skills. A note on shyness. Let me remind you of one common misconception I discussed for adults in Chapter 2. Being introverted is not the same as being shy. Both introverted and extroverted children can be shy. Shyness is a state of anxiety wherein a person is afraid of rejection, ridicule, or embarrassment. Some shy children have poor social skills. They avoid social situations, whether it's with one person or 20, because they are afraid of being rebuffed or rejected. Social activities are very painful for them. They often attack themselves for everything they do or say in social situations. Introverted children usually have good social skills and often enjoy social situations. They may need to ease into social engagements, and they become tired if they have to deal with too many people for too long. They may feel uncomfortable because they don't like to interrupt, and this can leave them feeling left out of groups. But in general, introverted kids enjoy social activities. Nevertheless, if an introverted child is continually pushed or criticized for being introverted, he or she can become shy, inhibited, or afraid. If extroverted children are shamed, criticized, or humiliated, they also can develop shyness. Being shy is a very difficult problem for extroverts. One of my clients is a dramatic 15-year-old shy extrovert. She wants to be with her friends and needs to be out and about to gain energy, but she is so anxious she can hardly sit still. In my office, she rocks the glider chair so fast I think she's going to launch herself through the window. As we work to reduce her social anxiety and increase her interpersonal skills, she will be able to find sources of stimulation without so much anxiety. Explain to your shy children the difference between shyness and introversion. Let them know you will help them learn to feel more comfortable in social situations. Although some children are born shy, with a more active fear center in the brain, most learn to be shy because of criticism, shaming, and rejection. Introverted or extroverted shy children need to learn social skills to stop that critical voice in their head and to increase their confidence. There are some excellent books on shyness. Read a few and practice some of the suggestions. Introversion and extroversion are part of a child's temperament and cannot be changed. Shyness, on the other hand, can be improved significantly. Shy children and adults can reduce most of their fear and anxiety through learning new skills. Gifted and talented children. I am always uncomfortable with the terms gifted and talented, because all children are gifted and talented in some way. Nonetheless, I am discussing the topic because many introverted children and adults don't realize that their abilities and intelligence are valuable. Though studies show that there is a correlation between introversion and giftedness, introverted children often do not test well and may not be identified as gifted or talented. A gifted child is thought to have a genetic endowment that produces advanced and accelerated brain development. His or her cognitive, emotional, physical, and intuitive functioning results in high intelligence. The term talented refers to a child who possesses a cluster of traits that may result in an unusual level of ability. It is thought that gifted and talented boys and girls require responsive and enriched environments to develop fully their innate gifts. Here are some of the early signs of giftedness. Advanced abstract reasoning and problem-solving skills. Advanced progression through developmental milestones. High level of curiosity. Early and extensive language development. Early recognition of caretakers, for example, smiling. Enjoyment and speed of learning. Excellent sense of humor. Extraordinary memory. High activity level. Intense reactions to noise, pain, or frustration. Less need for sleep in infancy. Long attention span if interested in the topic or activity. Sensitivity and compassion. Perfectionism. Unusual alertness in infancy. Vivid imagination. For example, imaginary companion. Now that you have listened to it, let me add a word of caution. I believe there are three areas, activity level, verbal skill, and memory, where introverted children differ from this profile. In the first place, many introverted children do not have a high activity level. They may be rather sedentary or have bursts of activity. Second, their verbal skills may not be apparent. They may have an excellent passive vocabulary, but unless you draw them out, they may not demonstrate all the words they know. Finally, it is good to keep in mind that introverts tend to attach to long-term memory rather than short-term memory, as extroverts do. So it may take longer for introverted children to remember something, but once they do, they seldom forget it. Extroverts remember faster, but forget quicker. Listen to the list to see if your child is displaying some of these qualities. Raising a gifted or talented child can be exciting, as well as daunting. Here are a few suggestions to help you. Look at your child's characteristics from a positive perspective. For example, persistence and stubbornness can be seen as essentially the same trait. Assess your child's particular talents or interests and try to provide him or her with what he or she needs. For example, if your child loves painting, provide paints. Be a knowledgeable advocate. You may need to educate the educators about your child. Get help. Bright babies and toddlers can wear parents out. Enlist family and friends. Listen to your child with respect. Gifted kids may ask a lot of questions and challenge existing ideas. Explanations generally result in more cooperation. Teach your child how to access resources to find answers to questions you can't answer. Read books about giftedness. Look on the internet for information. Join a group for parents of gifted children and talk with other parents of gifted kids. Value your children's uniqueness, their opinions, ideas, and aspirations. Do not stress fitting in. Make sure they feel appreciated at home. Parent power. Kids are always the only future the human race has. William Saroyan. We can't protect our children from every danger in the world, but we can influence how they feel about themselves. When they are young, we can teach them to value and understand their temperaments. It's useful if they learn to take their own temperament temperature, as I discussed earlier in the chapter. We can also teach them to appreciate other people's temperaments. If we use our powerful bond with our children to help them nurture their natures, they will have a solid foundation to grow into adults with character. Character is a function of the way each person uses his or her innate temperament. It is an arena we have control over. Do our children use their gifts and their abilities constructively or destructively? The world would be a better place if every child grew up with integrity, curiosity, compassion, the ability to love and be loved, and the capacity to develop their inner strengths. Points to ponder. Observe whether your children are more introverted or more extroverted. Think about how your children create their energy. Think about your and your partner's temperaments. Are you innies or outies? Have a family talk about your temperaments and how they affect your daily relationships. You will appreciate one another more. Chapter 6. Socializing. Party pooper or pooped from the party? The room is a sea of people. The loud voices hurt my ears. I scan the room for a safe nook. My stomach tightens. My breath quickens. I feel like retreating. My husband Mike sees friends he wants to say hello to. He's excited. He loves parties. He threads his way through the huddled groups, smiling and nodding all the way. That's when I make a beeline for the bathroom. I stay in there, checking out the wallpaper, the hand towels, and the soap. I really appreciate a well-appointed bathroom. I begin to relax. My stomach unclenches. My breathing returns to normal. After a while, I feel prepared to leave the sanctuary of the bathroom. I locate Mike's bald spot in one of the huddled groups. I slip in beside him. He hands me a Pepsi. I chat with people. I enjoy hearing what they have to say. It's fun to laugh and talk. Every once in a while, I feel that old familiar urge to retreat, so I revisit the powder room. Occasionally, I'll pass another bathroom lurker. We recognize each other and smile. I know she's counting the minutes until she can leave without appearing rude. Dinner is served, then dessert. 2 bites into the peach melba, I turn to Mike and whisper, "I'd like to leave in 5 minutes." This is about as good as it gets for me at parties. And believe it or not, it has taken me years to develop even this level of coping capacity. I enjoy social gatherings. I do. As long as I know I'm leaving soon. If I know that pretty soon I can slip into my PJs and enjoy the peace and quiet of my bedroom, I can manage the uncomfortable feelings and energy expenditure that social gatherings entail. Indeed, I have found the more I understand introversion, the easier it has been for me to handle socializing. Many of the introverts I have had as clients or interviewed for this book found social events uncomfortable, even though they like people. In fact, many laughed in recognition when I described hiding out in the bathroom. "Oh, you do that too?" My client Emily came in on a Monday morning and flung herself into the glider chair across from me. She said with a laugh, "I've got a socializing hangover. I went to 2 events this weekend, and I had a great time, but I'm bushed. Why do I feel so pooped?" Most introverts have good people skills and enjoy wonderful relationships with their friends and family. In fact, many have professions that put them in touch with people, just as I do. So why do social gatherings often cause them anxiety and that drag-in-your-wagon feeling? The answer has to do with the fact that socializing in groups requires huge amounts of energy. First of all, it takes energy to gear up to go out because introverts tend to think ahead and imagine what it will be like for them later. They will end up feeling tired, uncomfortable, or anxious. Second, most introverted people need to ease into social situations gradually in order to get acclimated to the stimulation. Noise, colors, music, new faces, familiar faces, eating, drinking, smells, everything can cause brain overload. Finally, just physically being around a lot of people, friend or foe, drains energy from introverts. Snappy repartee versus substantive conversation. To find the good life, you must become yourself. Dr. Bill Jackson. The type of conversation engaged in at most social gatherings is made for extroverts, providing them with a lot of stimulation. But it goes against an introvert's natural grain and is extremely demanding. The chit-chat often focuses on subjects like the latest news, weather, and sports. It's often loud, competitive, and fast-paced. People usually talk standing up. Their faces are animated, and they make direct eye contact. They speak spontaneously, interrupting each other right and left, and ask a lot of personal questions. People who don't keep up with the chat often look and feel awkward. They are not drawn out, but rather overlooked and ignored by the group. I recently got a call from the mother of a 13-year-old boy named Cameron. She explained, "Cameron wants to talk to a therapist. He has diagnosed himself from the internet, and he thinks he has social anxiety." When Cameron came in, he talked about his life, and in a few minutes it was apparent to me that he had many friends, pals who sought him out for advice. I said, "Tell me why you think you have social anxiety." He said, "Well, I hate so many of those normal activities, going to the beach and to concerts, the crowd at lunch, and joking around before class. I always feel like I don't fit into the group. I either feel ignored or put on the spot." Cameron didn't realize it, but he understood himself very well. Introverts can be energized by one-on-one conversation about subjects that interest them, and they are recharged, up to a point, by a complex discussion where each person considers the other's opinion thoughtfully. I think of this as a generative conversation, because it keeps spawning new ideas. The pace of these evolving talks works better for introverts because they can sit down. Standing seems to require more energy and increases their sense of exposure. They can also listen more than speak, pause before they jump into the conversation, and experience fewer interruptions. They can look away if they need to reduce stimulation without losing contact with the other person. Smiling is less important. Embarrassing personal questions are less of an issue. They can answer them or not. And they don't feel as if they are getting too much or too little attention. In one-on-one talks, they are more likely to be drawn out. And if an introvert starts a comment without a preface, the other person will often ask for a connecting thought. If the dreaded brain lock occurs, it's not a problem to say, "Boy, what I was about to say flew right out of my head." When listening about what makes socializing difficult for introverts, it's not hard to understand why most people, even most introverts, confuse it with shyness. Continuum confusion. What is so confusing for introverts is that sometimes they enjoy socializing in noisy, overcrowded, standing-up groups and feel energized by it. The next time they feel depleted. What gives? Since most introverts feel they should enjoy mingling, they wonder why they don't always feel invigorated. When extroverts feel a little introvertish, they experience it as, "I just need some rest." Since they feel good about mingling, they give little thought to feeling pooped. It doesn't seem as unsettling to them, or as confusing. The fact is, we are all born with the physiological ability to extrovert or introvert. And if the conditions are right, we are not always aware of the reason, our bodies and brains may be ripe for some extroverting. Indeed, there may be times when we enjoy a good dose of chit-chat and have occasional perky partying experiences. However, if you are on the more introverted end of the continuum, the more common experience will be a need to restore after the social outings. To go or not to go, that is the question. There is no pleasure in having nothing to do. The fun is in having lots to do and not doing it. Mary Wilson Little. It is often a struggle for introverts to decide whether or not to go to a social gathering. We all get caught up in what we should do, and we forget to think about what we want to do. Obviously, there are some occasions when we have no choice. For example, certain work-related events, family gatherings, or your best friend's wedding. But there are others when we have options. Despite what most books about shyness suggest, you do not need to attend every function that comes along. On the other hand, if you avoid them all, you'll end up feeling isolated. Plus, you'll think you're a social chicken. Not to mention, you will miss out on what could turn out to be a fun time. As with most things in life, there's a middle road, which is usually the healthiest path. So learn to ask yourself specific questions about the upcoming social occasion to help you think through whether or not you should go. It's okay to be on the fence for a few days. It just means you have two good choices. Say to yourself, by Wednesday, I will decide and let Hannah know. If you don't go, you may regret it, but that's all right. It doesn't mean you made the wrong decision. If you practice giving yourself choices, you will begin to see that sometimes you do want to go. Here are some of the questions you can ask yourself when you are trying to decide whether or not to attend a party. Is this occasion beneficial to my career or my partner's career? Is this event important to me, a fundraiser for a charity I believe in, or for a politician I support, or a party given by a close friend? Is it the type of occasion where I might be put on the spot, asked to speak into a microphone, or to introduce people? Is this a one-time opportunity, or will something like it happen again? Is it an activity I hate, a movie premiere, a roast, an auction, an event where there will be lots of drinking? Will there be a small, medium, or large crowd? Will I know a lot of people, some people, or no one? Will I hurt the feelings of someone I care about if I don't attend? Have I been out to too many social occasions recently, or too few? From time to time, give yourself permission to broaden your social repertoire and stretch your socializing muscles. For example, if the occasion is important to you or your partner in terms of your careers, consider dropping in just for a short time. Talk to the people you need to see, like your boss, and then leave. It's a perfectly acceptable option to dip in and duck out. You can always stay longer if you find that you are having fun. Boo and hooray. I polled a number of introverts about what social gatherings they dreaded and which ones they found more enjoyable and less draining. These lists reflect personal preferences. Think about how you feel about the different events mentioned. The ones in the boo category were cocktail parties, charity events, receptions, crowded events, company picnics, candle, basket, Tupperware parties, open houses, beach parties, large sporting events, ear-splitting concerts, and receiving lines. Notice how many require standing up. In the hooray category were museum exhibits, especially with audio tape guides and benches, lectures, small guided tours, picnics, concerts, baby or bridal showers, if you're not the mom-to-be or the bride, and thus the focus isn't on you. Small dinner parties, family get-togethers, movies, classes, walking with a friend, driving with a friend, and individual sports. Slipping yourself permission. Many introverts develop social rules for themselves based on extroverted standards. Some I have heard over the years are, I must go to everything I am invited to. I must stay the entire time. I must talk to lots of people. I must look as if I am having fun. I must fit in. I must not be nervous. It is helpful to let go of those rigid expectations and try to develop guidelines that are playful and flexible. For example, on colored index cards, write some permission slips that you can draw on in the upcoming months. Put them in a little box so you can use them again and again. Here are some possibilities. I give myself permission to drive by the party and check it out without going in. Permission to go to the party and leave after 15 minutes, 1 hour, 2 hours, whatever. Permission to go to the party, eat one chocolate-covered strawberry, and then leave. Permission to go to the party and talk to only one person. Permission to go to the party and just people watch, one of my favorites. Permission to go to the party and feel nervous. Permission to go to the party and talk only to guests under the age of 10. Tactful turndowns. The point of tact is not sharp. Colleen Carney. Introverts often feel guilty or embarrassed because they don't want to attend a social occasion. As a result, they may come across as curt or uncaring when they turn down the invitation, even though they care very much. Sometimes they are trying to avoid saying no by neglecting to RSVP. This makes matters worse. It's helpful to learn ways of saying no tactfully, so the host or hostess doesn't feel rebuffed. The goal is to acknowledge the invitation, say whether you can attend, and make it easy for the person to invite you again next time, if that's what you'd like. Remember, it's okay to tell a white lie when you have to. Many introverts tend to be scrupulously honest, and this isn't always in their best interest. For example, if you declined an invitation to a party by saying, "I don't have the energy," your host or hostess would surely take it personally. Being in society, as Jane Austen pointed out to us, means that we must occasionally grease the wheels of human interaction. Otherwise, they get gummed up. Here are some simple yet tactful ways to say no. I was so delighted you thought of me. Unfortunately, I won't be able to make it. You don't always have to give a reason. I really wish we could come to your party, but we already have an engagement that day. Thanks so much. Oh, dear, we can't come on that day, but we'd love to be included next time. Thanks so much for the invitation. We'll just be dropping by for a few minutes since we have somewhere else to be, but we don't want to miss the chance to see you. Can we bring anything? Energy conservation. Think of the fierce energy concentrated in an acorn. You bury it in the ground, and it explodes into a giant oak. George Bernard Shaw. It's important to conserve energy before you go out for a night on the town. Like a dam that harnesses the flow of a river in order to utilize its power, you should store up energy to spend extroverting. Here are some tips that may help. Don't schedule too many social occasions in the same week. Take a walk, read, nap, or sit in nature before the get-together. Drink plenty of water and take deep breaths when you feel anxious about the party. Eat some protein to boost your energy before you leave home. Have the sitter come early so you can get ready without a hassle. Listen to a relaxation tape or calming music on the way to the party. Set aside time the following morning to recharge. Anticipating. Worry is interest paid on trouble before it comes due. William Ralph Inge. Many introverts tend to foreshadow. They think ahead about what could go wrong, or they remember how tired they felt the last time they went out. This can add to apprehension about social occasions. If you are picturing yourself dropping shrimp sauce on your shirt, or see yourself dragging home from the wedding, Try to redirect your anxiety. Talk to your partner about your concerns. Share a little humor about them. Remind yourself, I will have a good time. I can handle whatever happens. Tell yourself, I don't need to think about that, if you keep dwelling on something embarrassing. Imagine yourself at social occasions you have enjoyed. Anticipate meeting a friend who will be at the event. Remind yourself that you can regulate your energy. Arrival strategies. When you go into a social occasion, you can take some pressure off yourself by realizing that you don't need to enter a party like an extrovert. You need to enter like an introvert, usually in stages, with some time to observe first. Slowly acclimate yourself to the party atmosphere. Just as a deep sea diver controls his ascent to the surface of the water, from 200 feet to 100 feet, and so on, in order to reduce the social bends. Ease into the festivities step by step. 1. Remember that you will probably feel tense. Remind yourself that it's okay to feel unsettled when you approach the door. Take 2 big, deep breaths, then ring the bell. 2. As soon as you enter, select a location, for example, by the fireplace, sitting on the arm of the sofa, where you can perch and look around the room. 3. Hunt down the hostess, say hello, and ask if you can help. Giving a hand usually helps people feel included. 4. If he or she is not too busy, ask the host or hostess for a house tour, or just walk around looking at family photos. 5. From your observation platform, pay attention to how you are feeling. Are you getting acclimated? 6. As you begin to get your sea legs, notice if there is another percher you could meet, a friend to talk to, or a group to join. 7. Some people like to spend the whole party with people they know. Others want to practice meeting someone new. You always have choices. Name tagging. Most introverts hate name tags because they draw unwanted attention and increase their sense of exposure. But at some events, they're expected. Here are some tips to make them more playful. Write each letter of your name in a different color. Draw a cute picture instead of or with your name. Attach the tag in a less noticeable place. Don't wear a name tag at all. 7 Guerrilla Socializing Tactics. To be prepared is half the victory. Cervantes. So, once we have made it into the room, we are ready to mix it up a bit. But how? Most of us will make a beeline for friends, hang out with who we know. But what if we don't know anyone? Or our friends are fully engaged? Or we want to meet new people? Here are some tactics to make meeting people easier. Tactic 1. The sea anemone. Patrick, an introvert, entered a standing-room-only crowd at a conference in Washington, D.C. He knew no one. Surrounded by a mass of business people who were pressing in on him, Patrick began to feel an agitated sensation in his stomach and arms. Fortunately, he knew in advance how to react in a situation like this, so he took a deep breath and backed out of the room. He wandered upstairs onto the balcony, where a few overstuffed chairs sat empty. He settled into one of them and watched the teeming scene below. After a while, several other escapees from the crush below came up, and soon they were all sitting down and chatting at an inny pace. This is what I call the sea anemone tactic, and it's one of my favorites for large gatherings. Sea anemones are creatures that attach themselves to rocks, their tentacles swaying with the ocean currents. Then along float some edible tidbits, and the sea anemone's tentacles lure them in. I always feel like this when I set up shop in some corner or viewing site at a party. I am so much more comfortable sitting down, anchored to my rock, than I am wandering around the room. Sure enough, sooner or later some folks drift by. I give a small friendly smile, and they often stop to exchange pleasantries. Some stay a while and some drift off. Soon, another guest bobs over for chit-chat. Tactic 2. Act as if. When I was in graduate school studying to become a psychotherapist, I was taught to act as if. It's a way to try on a new skill or a new role until it becomes a part of you. Pretend to know what you're doing, and sure enough, you will start believing that you can do it. Fake it till you make it is another way to put it. At first, I was irritated with my professors. Were they kidding? How could I fake such an important job? Soon, I realized that as an inexperienced psychotherapist, acting as if was all I had. It is a powerful tool, and it works. Many introverts value being authentic, as do I, so I had to remind myself what real qualities were tied up in my act. Here's what I came up with. First, I knew I could listen. Second, I knew I could reflect back what I heard. Third, I knew that something to say would eventually come to me, even if it was, "I'd like to hear more about that next week." Fourth, my intention was to be helpful. So, during therapy sessions, I would slip into my listening mode. And soon, like a kid riding a two-wheeler who doesn't realize the training wheels are off the ground, I began to feel that I could be a therapist without the as-if training wheels. How does this experience translate into social life? As you enter a party or a gathering, act as if you're a confident, introverted guest. Picture yourself looking poised. Remember a time when you mingled with an air of assurance. Adopt the attitude, "I'm going to fake it till I make it." Smile at strangers. Look at people and be curious about them. Remind yourself that although you may feel antsy, you look calm. What you project is different from what you feel. Remind yourself that you have lots of interesting things to say. Make eye contact with someone and then join their group. You can listen to what people are saying. You can comment on it. And you can add one idea. In a few minutes, move on to another group. Soon, your training wheels will be up, and you will feel considerably more relaxed. The experience will not always be perfect. You may start off with that icky, jittery feeling, topped off with a dash of anxiety, and you may have some awkward moments. But overall, you'll be good enough. And the more you act as if you are self-assured, the more confident you'll become. Especially since the secret trick to this technique is learning that the as-if you is already part of you. It's you without fear. Tactic 3. Prop job. An introverted friend of mine has taught me a nifty trick. When she goes to parties, she wears a prop, usually one of her ceramic necklaces with miniature figures on them. One is a pride of cats in frisky poses. Another has a spray of dancers circling her neck in spirited prances. They look fanciful and intriguing. People ask her about the whimsical figures. What are they? Where did she get the necklace? A conversation has started. Other socializers are also relieved to have something to focus and comment on. At first, you may think that having a prop will draw too much attention to you, making you feel even more overstimulated. But my clients find that this isn't what happens. The job of the prop is to put the focus on the prop, not on you. It's fun to wear a pin, an old political button, a miniature picture in a locket, a funny hat, unusual hair accessories, or a special ring or watch. I have a Winnie the Pooh watch. Pooh is running from bees. And I have actually had people tell me, well, I knew if you were wearing a Winnie the Pooh watch, you couldn't be all bad. I also have a collection of zany socks, and I'm always surprised by how many people notice them peeking out from under my slacks. I like to wear shoes with a subtle glitter or rhinestones on them. They usually earn a comment or two. As for ties, Mike has a collection of ties with animated characters on them. People immediately start chatting with him about their favorite cartoon characters. If you want only a few comments, choose something subtle. If chosen correctly, your prop will attract the very folks to whom you will want to talk. I like people with a sense of humor, so when I wear my Groucho glasses or my beagle socks with floppy ears, I usually like whoever laughs at them. And people assume I'm okay because of my prop. When I work with children, I always wear my Mickey Mouse fanny pack for the first session. Kids warm up to it and to me right away. Pets and children are great props, and of course they're far more than that. Another good prop is a camera. Very often, it's the people who are snapping pictures at social gatherings who feel the most awkward. Many introverted people who are in the public spotlight, Tipper Gore is a good example, find that it's comforting to take pictures. They are using their introverted ability to observe from a distance, to be out of conversation, and yet in the group. It's a clever way to regulate their own stimulation. Tactic 4. A friendly face. As I mentioned at the beginning of the chapter, some of the elements involved in social encounters with strangers are especially problematic for introverts, including making eye contact, making small talk, figuring out when to smile, and covering embarrassing moments, such as forgetting a friend's name. Just remember, even extroverts can have awkward moments with people they don't know. The eyes have it. Eye contact increases stimulation, so we introverts tend to avoid it. It's okay to look away in order to lower the level of stimulation. The secret is to know when to look away. Here are some suggestions. When people are talking to you, look straight at them. When you are speaking, you can look away and still seem to be in the conversation. Use eye contact for emphasis. Look intensely at someone to increase the impact of what you are saying. Eyes can speak volumes without words, so practice raising your eyebrows. Oh, really? Blinking. Wow. Rolling your eyes. I can't believe it. And widening your eyes. You've got to be kidding. To enlarge your nonverbal vocabulary. People like to feel that a listener is reacting to what they are saying. You can show your interest without saying a word. You can smile with your eyes, not just your mouth. Your Mona Lisa smile. The reason human beings smile and show expression is to engage other people. Introverts are focused internally, and they often don't invite responses from outside. As a result, they tend to have still faces, inexpressive and unsmiling. Unconsciously, they know appearing more animated might bring more stimulation and distraction. But a lack of expression can be uninviting, even unnerving, to other partygoers who are desperately looking for friendly faces. At the same time, if you go to the opposite extreme and smile too often, you may feel overly aggressive to other reserved or shy people. Would you want to cozy up to a Cheshire cat? So learn the art of the subtle smile. Smile with your lips closed at first. After you feel more at ease with someone, you can show a little tooth. By the way, research shows that we can actually heighten our mood by smiling. It affects the chemical mood lifters in our brains. Tactic 5. Small talk. Many introverts don't realize that there's a logic to small talk that anyone can learn. Small talk is made up of four phrases: openers, sustainers, transitions, and closers. 1. Openers. Be prepared is the Boy Scout motto, and it works for party conversations too. Before you attend a meeting, party, or other gathering, read a magazine or newspaper, or watch a popular TV show or a movie to feed yourself conversation ingredients. Brush up on the latest political topic and prepare a comment, opinion, or question. If you want to join a group with an ongoing conversation, research shows that the best entry line is to ask a question about the topic under discussion. Don't come into the group and shift to a new topic. The group can feel threatened. Openers are open-ended, neutral questions that invite the other people to talk with you. So write down several lines you could say about yourself or the party. Like hors d'oeuvres, these lines whet the appetite. They give others the chance to start talking. Practice them in front of a mirror or with a friend. Here are a few samples. Hi, I'm Marty. How do you know the host? Hi, I love the music they're playing. Do you know the name of the piece? Hi, I'm Marty. Jim is my boss. Isn't this a beautiful home? Isn't the food delicious? I love this backyard. 2. Sustainers. Learn some comments that will keep the conversation going, sustaining it with nourishing questions. Sustainers ask folks for their opinions or comments. If the topic is the latest box office buster or popular TV shows, here are some sustaining questions. Did you see that movie? What was it about? What did you like about it? What was the message of the film? What did you think of the acting? I wonder why that show is so popular. What do you think? 3. Transitions. Introverts often feel unsteady while schmoozing. If the conversation starts to dry up or become uncomfortable or too personal, they can feel even queasier. It's good to remember you have control. Use it to steer the talk onto safer shores before it hits the rocks and breaks up. It's often a good idea to direct the conversation back to something that was said earlier. For example, you said that you were a teacher. What grade do you teach? When you mentioned your vacation, I was wondering where you went. A minute ago, you said you had a son. How old is he? Uncomfortable moments in conversations may also mean that it's time to move on. Remember, if the conversation is not only drying up, but dying, don't try to resuscitate it. If you realize that the person who asked the personal question is too nosy and doesn't get the hint, stop trying to build bridges. Or if there is a general itchy feeling that either of you wants to take a break, take one. You can use one of the suggestions below for closers. 4. Closers. Social research has found that standing chit-chat groups last an average of 5 to 20 minutes, 30 minutes tops. So don't be offended when others change groups. It seems to be the nature of the beast. You might say, I hate to leave this intriguing conversation, but I see Jake over there and I need to speak to him. You can always hook up with someone again later if you really enjoy talking with him or her. If you want, you can ask for the other person's phone number or card before you break away. Perhaps say, I'd love to get together with you for coffee sometime. May I call you? When you are ready to leave either a one-on-one conversation or a group, it's important to say something. Don't just fade away like a ghost. Departures need to be short and crisp. These lines can help you duck out of a conversation, so practice them. And don't take it personally if someone uses them on you. I need to refresh my drink. Excuse me. I've enjoyed this conversation, but I see my boss over there, and I'd like to say hello. Excuse me, I promised to call and check on my kids. Excuse me, I'm going to go get some punch now, but I'd like to talk more later. Is the bathroom over there? Thanks. Oh, there's Sam. I've got to give him a quick message. Excuse me, but I promised the hostess I would help out for a few minutes in the kitchen. I think I'll hit the buffet now. The line seems to be thinning out. If you are the one who is brushed off, just say something short and sweet and let the person escape. For example, it was nice to talk to you. I enjoyed meeting you. I enjoyed our chat. Have a good evening. Tactic 6. Failsafe. What if you practice these smoother schmoozing tactics, and despite all your preparations, you max out, vapor lock, or begin to itch? What can you do for fast aid? Here are a few fail-safe methods for when the going gets tough. They'll help you reduce your too much feeling and anxiety. Take a few deep breaths. That always helps. Move away. Find a new place to sit or stand and watch. Take a bathroom break. Put a wet washcloth on your forehead and close your eyes for a few minutes. Remind yourself, it's not me. Say it over and over if you have to untie the knot in your belly. Tell yourself you will be okay. Ask a friend or partner to walk outside with you for a minute. Stroll around and hum. This seems to shift emotions. Let your partner know if you are tapped out and ready to leave. It helps if you work out a signal together in advance. When you aren't in a crisis mode, watch how other folks handle needing some air. If you ask some of your friends, you may be surprised to find they have all sorts of other fast aid break methods. Tactic 7. Groundhog Day. Often, after something icky happens at a party, we go over and over it in our heads. What we said, what others did. Sort of like the movie Groundhog Day, in which Bill Murray relives the same day over and over. Of course, it's our own internal critic, blaming us for any possible transgression. We clammed up, we said too much, we didn't smile enough, we felt too uncomfortable. It's a painful grilling, and needs to be interrupted. I once had a client, Lori, who was a physics professor. She had an extremely harsh internal judge who criticized her every move. In therapy, Lori and I worked to lessen the judge's power. Slowly, the picture in Lori's head changed from an uptight, stern-faced, gray-haired woman in dark robes who was pounding her gavel and haranguing Lori, to a laid-back coach in a Hawaiian shirt with thongs on her tanned feet. This new, smiling, accepting advocate sipped a tropical iced tea with a small flowered umbrella in it and said things like, "Hey, hang loose, you did okay. Have a tea on me." If you realize there is negative talk going on in your head after you exit a social encounter, try picturing the judge who is criticizing you. First, tell him or her to put a sock in it. Next, switch channels to thoughts of something pleasant, like a beach, a campfire, a snowy or rainy day. Finally, replace that critical voice with a kinder, gentler, more supportive one. "You're doing fine." If this doesn't work, then think of a kind person whom you have heard in your life, in a movie or on TV, and let him or her encourage you. Maybe you could conjure up Glenda the Good Witch, who encourages Dorothy in Oz, or the fairy godmother who helps Cinderella, or John Wooden, the firm but fair former UCLA basketball coach, who expected a good performance from his team, but knew everyone goofs up sometimes. It's my party and I'll cry if I want to. What if the party, shower, or meeting is at your house? You will probably be overstimulated just thinking about people traipsing through your home, and the anticipation will drain a lot of juice from your batteries. So make the occasion as easy and as user-friendly as you can. Keep it simple. Choose dishes that you can prepare ahead of time, order out, or have a potluck. It's often difficult for innies to manage cooking and guests all at once. Put a start and stop time on your invitation. If you control the guest list, stick to people you like. Make sure the number is a comfortable size for you and your home. See if you can invite at least 2 introverts to every extrovert. Try to think up an activity to encourage folks to chat with one another. Here's one that I use. On the entry hall table, I set out a huge jar full of golf balls, paper clips, pretzels, dog bones, or marbles. The more diverse the objects, the better. Then I have each guest write his or her name on a slip of paper, along with their estimate of how many items are in the jar. This gives guests something to chat about as they share their guesses. Later on during the party, I announce the winners and give out wacky gifts. If it's a small gathering, I like to have group projects or a theme for activities that involves my guests. Stringing popcorn, shucking corn, decorating the Christmas tree, creating banana splits, or assembling individual pizzas. Breaking the ice. I like to set up some sort of game so people will be encouraged to interact. My favorite entails pinning names of famous people, or animals, on my guests' backs. I often have my children or a friend do this. The name can be from the movies, literature, or sports, whichever best fits my group. The instructions are for the guests to ask one another yes and no questions, trying to determine whose name they're wearing. Am I alive now? Did I win an Oscar? Do I have a tail? Is my sport a team sport? I have always found this famous name game to be a great icebreaker for shy and quiet folks of all ages. The guests who can guess their own identities win silly gifts. Leaving the party, the best part. Never insult an alligator until after you have crossed the river. Cordell Hull. Before the party, formulate your escape plan. Have a definite departure time in mind. That way you will know your energy is protected. Discuss this with your partner in advance. You can always stay longer if you want to. If this happens, remember and savor the moment. That nice feeling of wanting to stay may not come your way very often. Whenever possible, have your own transportation. That way you can leave when you want, and you won't end up being trapped. While the idea of you and your partner taking separate cars may seem a bit odd, it can make sense in the long run. You can each leave when you feel ready, avoiding the resentment that can build when you have to wait to go or are dragged away too early. And when it's time to go, don't forget to say goodbye to your hosts. Sometimes introverted people are so fried by the time they leave that they forget to say thanks. When you are ready to run for the hills, here are some tried and true exit lines. I'm just exhausted, so I'm going to scoot, but it's been a wonderful party. I was having such a good time. Sorry we have to leave. I promised the sitter we'd be home at a decent hour, so we've got to go. We have really enjoyed ourselves. It was great to see everyone. Thanks for inviting us. It's a shame I have to be out of the house so early tomorrow. Great party. Talk to you soon. If you feel like you can't tolerate even one more encounter, then leave without saying goodbye, but phone, email, or send a thank you note the very next day. Remember, there are lots of ways for introverts to maintain meaningful relationships and be personal without having to talk on the phone or face-to-face. Holidays. On automatic pilot? The only gift is a portion of thyself. Ralph Waldo Emerson. Holidays are high-energy times. They can be too overstimulating for introverts. Even extroverts can feel overextended. Find ways to celebrate with less hustle and bustle.